Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, as we drift into the warmer days, I am between a lovely week with family visitors where we did all those things, you know, like Yellowstone National Park and the headwaters of the Missouri and the Gallatin Historical Museum. We did so much with them, the Museum of the Rockies. Anyway, I'm between that and a birthday weekend for my husband. So this week, we have a double feature of Desert Oracle Radio for you. From tourists putting their lives at risk to unexplained encounters all over the world to a little history lesson, it's great listening whether you are on a road trip or just lounging in the hammock. Our first episode was produced by Ken Lane on May 25th, 2018, and it's titled High Desert Death.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the Mojave. What a weird time we're in. It's weird everywhere. It's like a virus. A global pandemic of madness. It's especially here, this great sickness, this thirst for blood, this lust for the blood of the young, this maniacal desire to annihilate the self, but only after soaking the ground with the blood of innocence. Up here in the high desert, we had quite a scene Monday night in the desert. They called it a field in the newspaper reports because I guess there's no accepted editorial term for a patch of open desert alongside a road. Some open desert with creosotes here and there waving their spidery arms around in the wind, a couple of Joshua trees, a steady line of cars on the two-lane. There's an intersection here by the middle school, and a number of people have died right there in recent years just in traffic accidents. Morons racing by at 75 miles per hour while school buses try to make a left turn, that kind of thing. It's a pretty miserable life most of the time, and a lot of people are determined to get out of it one way or another by vehicular manslaughter, by a bottle of pills, and anyway, there are memorial roadside crosses here. On both sides of that road now. One of them brand new. These crosses are all over the high desert, marking all the spots where we kill each other with automobiles and other things, where we run down beloved local musicians riding their bicycle home, where we slaughter people crossing the highway because the stoplight is a mile away, where we honk and scream and rev the engine because the car in front of us is waiting for a mother trying to get her babies across the 5-lane highway before that walk signal blinks red. I was stuffing envelopes in the office not long ago and staring out the window, and you always see people dodging cars doing 60 miles an hour where it's posted 45 and should be 25. But on this busy tourist Sunday, I saw a group of about 24 tourists, international tourists, with one of those tour group luxury buses waiting for them in the motel parking lot. And they all had selfie sticks. trucks and $1,000 cameras, and then I realized what they were doing, which was insane. A few of them would run across the highway, dodging traffic, and go over to that abandoned gas station with the abandoned convenience store on the north side. The others on the opposite side of the busy highway would cheer and wave and yell and take a lot of pictures or video, whatever they were doing. And then a couple more would run across the highway. Horns honking, brakes squealing, and oh, they were having a grand time. All these seemingly well-off young people, fashionable outfits, backpacks full of cameras and lenses, and the near misses, the near-death experiences, seemed to be the height of hilarity to all of them. Finally, my nerves were such that I could not take it anymore, and I ran outside to tell them to get the hell out of the roadway, and they just smiled and waved. They could not really hear me, and if they could, they either did not understand or did not care. I called the CHP, and a black and white rolled up just a few minutes later. They're really all over Joshua Tree these days because it's such a death trap. A suicide rap. And you get these hard-ons from the Marine base who just cannot stand to slow down. It just burns them up inside. And every one of them has Texas plates. It's a disease of the brain. But the tourists had already gotten back into their tour bus, so the highway patrol did what they do, just kind of slowly go around the block once. That was that, call complete. Maybe a month later, on the same two-lane where the latest murder and latest suicide by cop occurred, I saw the same kind of tour bus, maybe the same operator, out of San Gabriel Valley, I think. And sure enough, there were a lot of younger tourists with fashionable black leather backpacks filled with photography equipment, all laughing and smiling as they ran back and forth across this road, taking pictures of each other. I have no idea what kind of sickness is involved here, and I'm sure not going to look it up on the internet. I don't want to know. I'll just wait it out and hope the fad passes before Joshua Tree is in the headlines for causing the latest international incident. Boy, one day, probably soon, some country is just going to wipe us out. It feels like they're all getting ready, doesn't it? It'll happen one way or another. I hope it's Canada. I think the Canadians would be kindest. Oh, sure, there will be something like the Nuremberg trials and lots of hangings and firing squads and all that, but I hope whoever survives, the mostly innocent people anyway, I hope they wind up with health care and maybe enough money to pay rent and get food. What a nightmare world. What a nightmare. I'd sure like to wake up from it. I'd sure like to get some rest and wake up without the dread. Wouldn't that be nice? So this burnout, 58-year-old suicidal maniac with a gun, of course with a gun, just make up whatever combination of despair and hatred and add with a gun. Well, he lures his young ex-girlfriend to this high desert crossroads. You can look up the details if you want. They're all bad details. I guess if I had been standing outside, I might have heard the gunshots. That kind of thing really carries on a quiet desert night. Well, she knew it was bad and she went anyway, but she had a friend on the phone. Just listen in case you hear trouble, then call 911. There was trouble. The deputies got out there. Yeah, And at least the story in the newspaper is that the suicidal burnout murdered his ex-girlfriend right in front of the cops. And they opened fire and they missed, or maybe he was wounded. The accounts vary. And honestly, nobody will ever know because the only people who survived the night were the deputies. Apparently, they chased him through the creosote, the Joshua trees, and the yuccas, and then they finished him off. Now, of course, they closed off this major road for the whole next day because they love that. Nothing even happened on the road, but they've got to do it, got to do the internal investigations, go through the motions. I went over there and walked around the next day, walked around all the sheriff's do not cross yellow tape tangled up in the creosote, wrapped around the trunk of a Joshua tree, blowing into the roadway like an old cassette tape unspooled in the desert roadside weeds. Now, I was at the saloon after that, and you know how gallows humor is pretty much expected at the bar. It's natural. It's not meant to be mean. It's a way to cope with it all, like saying, well, at least he's roasting in hell now. I mean, we're the ones in hell. This is it. The earthly paradise is here, and men do not see it. And so we are in hell. God knows if we broke down crying over everybody who was hurting, everybody who suffered violence at the hands of another evil, broken little man, from the barrel of the gun in the hands of another broken and evil little man, well, nobody would ever get out of bed ever again. And so somebody says, you hear about that murder, the double murder or whatever it is? The guy murdered this poor young girl and then got the cops to pull the trigger on him. Yeah, where was that? Right on the boundary line. Well, I hope it wasn't on the Joshua Tree side. I hope it was on the Yucca Valley side. So that'll be on their murder statistics instead of on Joshua Trees for the year. Boy, there's no animosity like the endless grudge between neighboring towns. Well, it turns out it was on the Joshua Tree side. I saw it myself. Yellow tape all tangled up in the bushes. A real beautiful part of Joshua Tree on the south side across from the Mojave Desert Land Trust Gateway Parcel. That's 600 plus acres of Joshua Tree forest. Between Yucca and the little town of Joshua Tree. We should just close that intersection and that road for good and just make it a graveyard. Just dump the bodies right there. We sure make a lot of corpses. Gentlemen, ladies, members of the board, and of course, the general manager. It is not my intent to be somber, but I must report the facts of the investigation. There is no known method for total objectivity. The mental processing of any narrative, whether real or imagined, or some combination thereof, by nature applies a set of organizational rules to the constant stream of incoming data. The five senses, of course, but beyond that thought, beyond that reason, and informing all input, a consciousness made of instinct meshed with an evolving superconsciousness,
a collective brain containing all the known world's culture, its philosophies, its information. And yet the information is always filtered. We can only work in good faith if we believe in good faith that our methods are honest and our intent moral. As expressed by our founder, the first general manager, within these same adobe walls in 1918. This report upon the year of our chapter reaching a century in age is submitted without dissent by the research division. Closely observed the development of the phenomena over this century and can say without doubt that very little has been learned. Yes, we have reports, we have file cabinets full of reports, databases of decades of contacts, all cross-referenced and endlessly crawled by index robots seeking patterns, searching for connections, perhaps inventing connections, because if we have learned anything, it is that as soon as you make something up, people begin observing it. There is a type of entity encountered throughout human history. It has been known by the names angel and demon, elf and ogre, god and monster. A brightly lit and seemingly benevolent feminine entity is always the Virgin in Catholic lands. The large-headed entities, such as lamb and its ilk, are now known globally as the Greys. The airships became saucers, and the saucers have become triangles. There is an intensity to the messages of the past quarter century as the messages have become more specific. As Richard Struthers wrote in his NASA study of the historical phenomenon that was published by the peer-reviewed Classical Journal in 2007, throughout recorded history, reports of what we today might call unidentified flying objects have been made and preserved. If more information were available to us, we would perhaps find that conventional scientific hypotheses could explain most, if not all, of these. Certainly, this has turned out to be true of most reports from better documented periods. There nonetheless remains a small residue of puzzling accounts, and regardless of what interpretation one places upon them, these constitute a phenomenon that spans centuries of time and widely different cultures. What may surprise the serious student of the subject is that despite the numerous articles and books published by scientists on UFOs over the past six decades, almost no scholarly studies of the very early history of the phenomenon have appeared. Note the similarity to George Cocker's influential paper for the RAND Corporation, 1968. Those familiar with the UFO literature are aware that reports of sightings did not begin with Kenneth Arnold's sighting in 1947, but that phenomena reported today is much the same as found in documents going back to the earliest times.
Valet gives a sampling of this. BLP Trench has made a more thorough study and reports on the research of others able to study the original documents. What was reported? Luminous disc, flying shields, globes, and elongated objects in the sky, sometimes alone, sometimes in large numbers. Occasional description of interactions with the observers are also mentioned.
including landings and seeing and communicating with occupants. The latter events, especially, were almost always interpreted in a religious context. One example is the repeated appearances of typical UFO phenomena at Fatima, Portugal, over six successive months in 1917. The October 13th phenomenon was the best reported and was witnessed by a crowd of about 70,000 persons, including a number of scientists, reporters, atheists, agnostics, as well as faithful Catholics. One of the scientifically curious was Dr. A. Garrett of the University of Coimbra. Rain, which had been falling that day, ceased and the crowd looked up to the sun, now visible through the heavy clouds. Professor Garrett writes, "I turned toward this, which was attracting all eyes, and I could see it like a disc with a clear cut edge, with a vivid rim, luminous and shining, but without hurting one." The comparison I have heard at Fatima was with a disc of dull silver, and it does not seem to me exact. It was a clearer, more vivid, richer color and with shifting tints like the luster of a pearl. It was not at all like the moon on a clear, transparent night, for one saw and felt it like a living star, nor was it spherical like the moon, nor did it have the same quality of lighter and less light. It looked like a burnished wheel cut out of mother of pearl, nor could it be confused with the sun seen through a fog. There was no fog. The disc spun dizzily round. It was not the twinkling of a star. It whirled round upon itself with mad rapidity, the sun preserving the celerity of its rotation, detached itself from the firmament and advanced blood red towards the earth, threatening to crush us with the weight of its vast and fiery mass. These moments made a terrifying impression. I have taken the liberty of providing bound copies of both the Rand paper and the NASA study. Yes, you may well have read both reports in the past, but there is reason to refresh one's memory due to the escalating situation. The similarity to the U.S. Nimitz and jet fighter encounters off the coast of San Diego and Baja, Mexico, cannot be denied. The difference, and this is a crucial difference, is that now the displays are happening for exclusive audiences of the U.S. military's finest pilots and high-ranking naval officers. The audience has changed, and this is of special concern. High-quality encounters now seem intended to pierce and deflate the last faith held by those living within this country in particular, the faith in military and technological superiority. Within the materials, please also reference the commercial jetliner encounters over Northern California and Oregon on the SFO PDX route last October and over Saguaro National Park involving American and Phoenix Air passenger jets on February 24. As this faith breaks down, we are hearing ever more leaked reports of disturbing incidents with military and intelligence witnesses that would have been kept quiet in better times. But there is no longer any denying that the wheels are coming off this particular bus. We are in a chess game with something we do not comprehend, and our defensive moves are meaningless because of it. Cyclical government and national collapse is an expected part of civilization, but the current structural weakness along with the prophecies does add up to something more than the rise and fall cycle. Because it is our specialty, it was the Mojave chapter that performed the initial investigation at the aerial school in September 1994 until being expelled from Zimbabwe. Exiled staff in Johannesburg were able to complete the investigation via proxies remaining in country. The event solicited a rare and serious civilian probe thanks to the late Dr. John Mack, the results of which are also included in your packet and which you will recall differ in no significant fashion from our own work. Of 62 school children who witnessed the event at the forested edge of the aerial schoolyard, it was a group of older children who received the telepathic message and prophecy. As is common in such cases, wordless thoughts were left to the individual to translate to language, and yet the language was remarkably similar. These students of a private school were of Black, white, and Asian ancestry. If you were to pick a likely population to transcend racist thought traps, these happy children in a pleasant rural suburb were a prime target. Our correspondent and research partner in sub-Saharan Africa, the late Miss Cynthia Hind, described the children as, quote, a cross-section of Zimbabweans, Black African children from several tribes, color children, meaning a mix of black and white, Asian children, meaning descendants of grandparents who were from India, and white children, mostly Zimbabwe-born, but whose parents were either from South Africa or Britain. Dr. Mack writes that the students received, quote, powerful messages about the human threat to Earth's ecology, and that the messages were being conveyed to the experiencers in vivid, unmistakable images. Some experiencers received the common late 20th century messages regarding ecology and climate, but the most mature of the young students received very specific messages about rapid changes to the planet that would occur when they reached adulthood that they should prepare for. Those changes are now upon us, suggesting a time travel or dimensional aspect, but also appropriate to the Valis theology. The transmitter, still theoretical in nature, could, by artificial intelligence, be learning new messages based on satellite readings of the atmosphere. Yet no such satellite has been discovered in planetary or lunar orbit. Yet the discovery of the interstellar object in October 2017, given the Hawaiian name Oumuamua and meaning a messenger from afar, fast approaching, raises this possibility, of course, that the transmitter is not fixed in our orbit, but perhaps intelligently controlled to make periodic passes. We are no closer to knowing the source of the messages than we were one century ago. We are no closer to understanding whether the messages are auto-generated to apply to our situation or if they are from a position of knowledge about our prospects. What we can affirm today is that this generation is now in adulthood. The prophecies were correct, and we were unable as a species to reverse course. Oh, I wish I knew what to make of it all. This has been Desert Oracle Radio. Friday nights at 10. KCDZ 107.7 FM. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Those Joshua Tree tourists sound a lot like some of the tourists I've seen on Main Street here in Bozeman. Well, anyway, we are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Our second episode today is titled Death Valley Days. It was released June 8th, 2018, and it's a little history lesson and then some. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the Mojave, a relatively cool night tonight. Thanks to some mild, late spring weather we very much appreciate. School is out up here in the high desert. Congratulations to the kids and condolences to all the parents. But it is not summer until the solstice, and that's another 2 weeks out yet. And then we shall get into the hot stuff. A bittersweet time of year as always. Sweet because the tourists are mostly gone. Their money is mostly still here. And you can get a drink at the saloon without advance reservations. But it's a little bitter because it does compress the day somewhat. Your walks and your hikes and your bicycle rides, well, they will be closely timed to sunrise and sunset. You will watch that humidity level as well, because when the monsoon weather comes around, the previously comfortable in the shade 105 degrees becomes a sauna with no exit. June 21 is the solstice, our blessed summer solstice. Now, some people love that blistering summer heat. Rabid pit bulls and Englishmen 20 generations back, etc. But what I love most about the solstice is that the days start getting shorter, which I find cheerful. Even as the days get progressively hotter. Clocking down to the fall, the beginning of the three seasons of high desert perfection. Summer does have its charms, of course. You can get up into the high Sierra with those sparkling blue rivers and creeks and lakes, where the nights dip down into the 30s. And the Steller's Jay demands you wake up and make him breakfast. And of course, on a summer night, you can watch the giant scorpions skitter across the patio. And it's great for summer night swimming parties. If your neighbor up the road with the swimming pool is out of town. It's nice to see all the European visitors too. They like it hot. Plus, they've got that month-long vacation in the summer. Imagine living in a civilized country with a required month-long vacation. Minimum. The Germans especially love our western deserts when it's good and hot, like in the movies. Like it looks like in the movies, at least. When the mirages are shimmering on the highways, and the dust devils are miles high, twisting and dancing across the dry lakes. The ravens sure seem to enjoy the hot weather. They enjoy all the desert weather, don't they? You never see a raven complaining about the weather. Oh, they'll complain mostly about you existing in their royal presence, but whether it's below freezing or 112 degrees, the ravens are soaring around, or sitting in meditation on a fence post or a Joshua tree or the edge of the dumpster behind the Circle K. seem content. Seemingly content is what I mean. They seem to lack a lot of our problems. Eat when they're hungry, drink when they're dry. Relax and watch the sunrise, do daredevil flights around the granite outcrops with friends and family. And now and then get together for the Raven Festivals, the Raven Parties. Have you seen these Raven Conventions? Sometimes they're happening right above you, 1,000 feet above you. You see it most on hot summer days. Maybe 100 ravens. Sometimes you need the field glasses because they're just black flecks against the blue sky. Soaring and diving, a whirlwind of corvids. So far up in the air, you can't hear them. Or maybe you hear the occasional distant burst of happy cawing. They must come from 10 miles around, a parliament of ravens. It must be cooler up there, too. What fantastic animals. In moderation, of course, like everything. Remember, every time you don't put the lid on the garbage can or you leave a bunch of old French fries and hamburger wrappers and tortilla chips sitting around, well, that pushes up the raven population. They do just fine on a natural desert diet, and it keeps their numbers in check. But give them a landfill full of pizza crust and rotten watermelon or whatever, a Walmart parking lot full of human garbage. And then they overbreed. And the extras go out looking for more food like baby tortoises out in the wilderness, baby desert tortoises. Well, anyway, it's not really summer yet, but it's already real hot up in Death Valley. Heat alerts are in effect, so says the National Park Service. Be careful. Don't be one of this year's dead, bloated tourists in the desert news stories. You know, Death Valley gets its name from a bunch of ill-equipped and ill-informed desert travelers. We call them the Death Valley 49ers because back in 1849, a wagon train headed for California's gold country split up, and, well, it's worth telling the story. Maybe you half remember it from a talking diorama at the Furnace Creek Visitor Center years ago. Can't hurt to refresh the memory, especially going into this time of year. People were crossing the Great American Desert by the thousands in the year 1849. People from Iowa and Illinois and Missouri and Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia. People looking for a better life. Some hungry for riches. Most just hoping for some good productive farmland or work building the new towns or a place to set up shop, selling mining supplies and blue jeans and jackass blankets, that kind of thing. But there was no railroad, no real road at all. Those things were yet to come. There was a trail, a hard trail, hard traveling. Because the Latter-day Saints had set up such a fine frontier town there at Salt Lake City, most of the 49ers got it together in Salt Lake. Here they met and hired guides, they purchased provisions, fed and watered their oxen and horses and whatever such animals they had, exchanged gossip and lies and a lot of exaggerated tales about the land of milk and honey. The land of milk and honey that awaited them on the other side. On the other side of that great snowy wall called the Sierra Nevada. A group of pioneers led by a Captain Jefferson Hunt set out from Salt Lake in October of that famous year, or infamous year, depending on which wagon train was carrying you west, or trying to. October was too late to be attempting this journey, too late to start. Everybody knew about the Donner Party, which had set out the year previous and ended in outrageous horror. Children eating bits of their dead and frozen parents. Just a nightmare played out in real life. Endless days of frozen hell. As it was too late to risk a snowy crossing in the High Sierra, and as these people lacked the patience and the resources to wait out the winter in Deseret, they decided to attempt a southern route along the old Spanish Trail. Or one of the old Spanish trails. As you know, by driving around the western deserts out here, many highways and byways and back roads claim to run east-west on the old Spanish trail. There were 107 wagons in this train, and the first trouble came when most of the wagons turned off at present-day Enterprise, Utah, following some wild rumor about a shortcut to Walker Pass that would shave 500 miles off. And, well, if you could shave off 500 miles of hard, slow travel, wouldn't you want to give it a try, at least consider it? Most of these wagons turned back upon meeting the first major obstacle, a deep canyon along the present-day Nevada state line. But a stubborn minority, commanding 20 wagons in all, they decided to press onward. That's difficult country, even today. They were at Groom Lake, which you will also know as Area 51, and sadly for them, there were no alien abductions, no free rides to California in a black triangle spaceship that we know of. Here on Groom Lake, they bickered and they argued, and they finally split up. One party headed toward snow-capped Mount Charleston outside of today's Las Vegas, hoping to find spring water on the way. A desert blizzard saved both groups, actually, dumping enough snow to water their animals and themselves and get them to the next point. Separately, the two paltry remnants of the wagon train took the pass beyond today's Death Valley Junction, and they reached Furnace Creek, which was missing the comforts of hotel and golf course and cocktail lounge at the time. And here, more hard choices were made, some of them famously bad. If you want a bedtime story to keep you up at night, maybe before a long drive to Death Valley or across Nevada, I advise you to pick up a good book on the subject, and the gift shops there in Furnace Creek are a good place to look. My favorite is called Escape from Death Valley, and you can find that online as well. It's especially interesting because the survivors tell the story in their own Baroque words. And it's easy to say, well, it was dumb of these dumbos to do such a dumb thing, but you'll have more sympathy when you read their tales. Everybody was operating with very little information, very little reliable information. And the fact was that 49ers were always dropping dead on this hard journey somewhere along the way, usually with no fanfare. But because two families remained stranded beneath the Panamint Mountains in that harsh valley for a couple of months, and because their ordeal was especially dramatic and the nation was hungry for disaster stories about those headed to California, when they were finally rescued by the returning William Lewis Manley and John Rogers, and let through 23 more days of rough going before reaching Rancho San Francisco on the Santa Clarita River north of Los Angeles. Newspaper reporters saw the drama in the tale, and it quickly spread up and down the state and back east across the country. While the surviving Jayhawker group only lost one of their number, legend says they named the place Death Valley as a farewell. "Goodbye, Death Valley," one of them said, allegedly. Is that even true? Who knows? The name stuck. For English-speaking Americans, anyway. The Tembisha Shoshone people had been living in the valley long before the Jayhawkers made their mistaken shortcut. There is no such morbid association with the place amongst the Tembisha. It is simply home. A place of pleasant winters, with abundant spring water, enough bighorn and rabbit and mesquite to eat well, and a rich culture and folklore. Summers would be spent up in the same cool mountains that so vexed the 49ers. Only in 1994 did the National Park Service begin to acknowledge the people who had long lived there, long before the pioneer stories, long before the national monument that would become today's national park. It was in the year 2000 that the Tembisha were finally granted a sliver of the land that had long been theirs. Thousands of acres of the Tembisha Reservation, 300 acres of which can be found in their village on the valley floor alongside the tourist resort. Had the 49ers been less ignorant and less threatening, well, maybe the local Shoshone would have pointed the way west on the ancient and established trails that go over those daunting mountains. As for Rancho San Francisco, you can visit a historical marker that's said to be near the site of the old Mexican land grant's main ranch house. On the appropriately named Old Road, right there where Newhall Ranch crosses the I-5, there's a desolate strip mall across the way with a Subway sandwich franchise. Across the cottonwood-filled riverbed is Six Flags Magic Mountain. Now let's jump 100 years from 1849 to 1949. You already know what a weird time it was in the deserts, the middle and late 1940s. You know about the Manhattan Project and Wendover and White Sands and the Nevada test site. And you probably heard about Roswell, too. Well, here's one that might be new to your ears. And it comes from the front page of the Bakersfield Californian. The issue dated Saturday, August 20, in the weird year of our Lord, 1949. Here's the headline. Two hot miners spot and chase disc pilots. A grizzled desert prospector reported in the town of Mojave that a whizzing disc crashed near Death Valley and that two little men jumped out and disappeared in the sand dunes, the International News Services says. The prospector, Buck Fitzgerald, who claims he has lived in the Death Valley region long enough to know a flying disc when he sees one, said that his sidekick, Maze Garney, also witnessed the event. Related Fitzgerald, quote, "The flying disc, which was about 24 feet in diameter, whizzed past me going about 300 miles per hour. It crash-landed and two little men jumped out and started running when they saw us. The men looked human, but they were very small, like dwarfs. We chased them over a sand dune, but lost them. I don't know where they went. The two prospectors allowed that with a temperature of 138 degrees, it was too hot to chase the little men for any great distance. Well, there are suspicions raised in the story, not least in the temperature so casually reported. 138 degrees would be the hottest recorded temperature in the history of Earth so far. Hey, we've got a few minutes left here. Let's open up the Desert Oracle radio mailbag. I'm way behind on this and everything else. I appreciate your patience, and I do always appreciate your cards and letters. This one comes from Christopher Kilbovitz. And it says, Dear Desert Oracle Radio, I wanted to drop you a line to thank you for your recommendation to visit the Desert Discovery Center in Barstow. You mentioned it on one of the podcasts, and so I'd planned to stop there on our most recent trip to the Mojave last week. Seeing the Old Woman meteorite was neat enough, and the little display on all the different substances that had been mined out of the desert was good for a few minutes. However, the time spent at the center really came in handy an hour or so later when we arrived at our second location, the Amboy Crater, in Mojave Trails National Monument. There we found a nice San Bernardino County sheriff who told us that the trail was closed, probably for the day. We headed on to our usual spot at Granite Pass to camp, and found out later, in the next day, that the sheriff's deputies had found a body near the crater. Based on the news report, our time at the Desert Discovery Center had delayed us just long enough to not be the ones to make that gruesome discovery. Something that I'm thankful my 3-year-old son did not have to experience. Sincerely, Chris. Well, Chris, I'm glad your visit to the Desert Discovery Center saved your 3-year-old kid from discovering a dead body. Although, who knows? He could have been the next Stephen King. Or maybe instead he'll be the next Dr. Edmund Yeager, our pioneering biologist of the Mojave. You never know with kids. I had not heard about this latest victim of Amboy Crater, but I did look it up. And while details are still very scarce, a week later it turns out another hiker did discover this body. The corpse of a 61-year-old man. We don't know anything beyond that right now. Firefighters and ambulance crews went up there and they found the body right where it was supposed to be. It had not walked away, I mean, which is good overall. And then the sheriff's department sent a chopper over there, picked up the body. Nothing suspicious right now so far, but then again, our local sheriff's department rarely seems to consider anything suspicious about dead bodies in the desert around here. I guess that's good. Positive thinking and all that. The body was found midday on May 30. Not a bad time to be enjoying the museum in Barstow. Not a bad time at all. I hope you enjoyed the rest of your camping trip. And from Amboy to Zizek's and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting on KCDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree in the High Desert. Every Friday night at 10 p.m. on your radio and everywhere all the time. with your favorite podcast player. You can find all kinds of information at our website, desertoracle.com, including information on the musical tracks you hear on this program by Red, Blue, Black, Silver, cooked up right here in Joshua Tree. Speaking of Red, Blue, Black, Silver, look him up on the internet so that you can learn about the spooky soundtrack he composed for our friend Jeremy Corbell's new feature documentary film, Skinwalker Ranch, to be released shortly on Netflix. And you can pick up a CD version of the soundtrack, too. We've got links on the website, desertoracle.com/radio. Now here's something to put on your calendar, especially if you're planning to be in or around Phoenix, Arizona, mid-July. Friday night, July 13, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., why don't you come on down to the Valley Bar in downtown Phoenix for Desert Oracle Radio live on stage with musical guests, the Boxhead Ensemble. Lots of people excited to hear these guys performing live again. We're planning to have some good stuff. We'll have our friend Jason P. Woodbury to help out. Some graveyard tales from Jenny Russell. And, well, Brendan Mays texted me and he said he's going to carpool with me out to Phoenix, whether I like it or not. Let me look at the phone here. He says, if you want to walk the walk instead of talk the talk, the environmentally responsible thing for you to do is carpool with me from Joshua Tree. I'll chip in for gas. I guess that means I'm driving. Our friends at Aquarium Drunkard are presenting this show along with the Valley Bar, July 13, $8 at the door. You're going to have a good time. It's a great venue. And we are just about to wrap up our first season, our first year-long season of Desert Oracle Radio. So make sure to tune in next week for the last of this season, which means we will shortly begin the next one forever and ever, etc., or so we hope. And finally, we are saddened to hear about Anthony Bourdain, who was, along with 100 other things, a good friend to Joshua Tree. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
My deep thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. Please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. That number is 406-404-6246. And remember, you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. So till next week, stay well and sweet dreams, and I think we'll just have my local birds take us out.